All right, Councilman Napa.
Thank you, Council President. Thank you, Mr. Speaker and Mr. Mayor, for your presentations. Just want to voice my support for this project. As both of the presenters mentioned, this area, this parking lot, really no fault of the owner, has just been a blight on the city for quite some time. This project represents a good community partner coming forward to develop the city in a way that I think is beneficial for all parties involved. One, we get to keep the sleeping giant that sits in the middle of our city at bay. We certainly don't want them to be able to encroach any further on the land we have and make the income from that property a possible zero. I think a five-year deferment to be able to allow the developer to appropriately and adequately develop that project is a fair trade-off for the 10x return in a short 5 years, which will presumably or should come close to paying for a substantial portion of what our responsibility is towards those school bonds. You know, I think that in itself, bringing that size of a revenue in, is beneficial to the city. You know, a project like this does have a lot to consider. The developers have made a strong commitment to be involved in the community and have made themselves available for any community development in the future opportunities that they can get involved. They've made it very clear to me through their council that they're happy, able, and willing to get involved in infrastructure improvements around the city as those opportunities may present themselves if they're able at that time. The my understanding, I do have one question for the speaker just as a point of clarity. My understanding that the agreement term will be defined by completion of the project, and that definition, as we spoke about earlier, is when the first building, because there are two structures, when the first building is ready to accept residents. Is that my understanding?
Yes, when the CO, the certificate of occupancy, is issued, that is when the five-year tax treaty will commence, not at the beginning, not at the building permit. And if my client is unable to secure the materials that we will cause, there may be a delay before they start. So it doesn't start when the mayor signs it. It starts when the first certificate of occupancy is issued. I want to, you bring a good point up, Councilman Knapp. I want to make two points. The five-year tax treaty is not 5 years at the current value of the land. It's 5 years and it escalates 20% per year. In addition to that, 20% of the units will be affordable. That's 38 units. 10% of those units will be at 80% or lower AMI, and the other 10% of those units would be between 80 and 100%, 20% of AMI. That's adjusted income. It's a fair trade. It really is for the city of Warwick and for the developer. The alternative to not doing this is two choices, and they're both not good for the city. The first choice is it gets sold to the airport. There is a $5.2 million offer today that exists for them to sell this parcel to the airport corporation, takes it off the tax rolls, and the city will not receive a dime. The other alternative is it stays the way it is for another period of time. And if it stays away for another period of time, you'll be getting taxes based on vacant land only. And you'll have, I don't want to use the word blight, but you'll have a old, in need of upgrade, parking lot with cones around it to prevent trespassing around it, next to other development that is improving around the area. To the mayor's credit, to the city council's credit, in the last 5 years, more development, and I use the word in a very positive way, more good development on Post Road. And it really hasn't been development, it has been redevelopment. Inn and Hope site is being redeveloped. You can go down there. The old Sheridan Hotel is being redeveloped. This is what we envisioned from a state perspective when we passed affordable housing laws. We wanted not necessarily development, but redevelopment. We are doing that. The old New England Tech property down the road was redeveloped into five reasonably priced townhouses. This is what we envision for the city. This is a private investment. Yes, we're asking for a five-year phase-in on taxes, but there is no public subsidy here. Not asking for any grants or loans from the state or the city. This is a good project. It's going to be a first-class facility. You'll have wonderful apartments mixed in with affordable apartments that nobody would know the difference. The only one knowing the difference is going to be the tenant paying the lower rent in exchange for the tax treaty.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And just to follow up on what you said relative to the RIAC offer, I can confirm that I've had conversations with members at RIAC myself that they're actively looking for adjacent properties to not have to park across of Airport Road and use that for additional parking. So the motivation on the Airport Corporation side is certainly there, and we definitely don't want them to acquire any more city property that we could use to bring in residents that bring in tax revenue, that support local business, that create a need for further employment opportunities because we have increased population in the city, and to bring put a spotlight on the city per se, just because we have a beautiful, you know, apartment complex and development coming in that beautifies that area that is in much need. So I look forward to the support, hopefully, from my colleagues to get this project off the ground, and thank you for your presentation.
Well said, Councilman.
Thank you.
Councilman Ricks.
Thank you. A few items, and I apologize. This is probably going to take over 10 minutes as fast as I, and as brief as I can be with something of this scale. First, I want to thank Speaker Shikarchi in that I don't think that any General Assembly in Rhode Island's history has done as much to promote affordable housing and address the housing crisis as you in your official capacity as Speaker. So I want to thank you for that first and foremost. I do think that affordable housing and improving the housing stock in general is a very important priority for the state, and likewise a very important priority for the city of Warwick. However, here, putting on the city council hat, as I must, and this is certainly not any slight at you, any slight for the developer, but I have not been particularly pleased with some of the process here, in that the city sent me a couple of documents along with, to the best of my knowledge, 8 out of 9 of us on the city council only really received documents, hard numbers and the like, regarding this as of last Tuesday. And so that leaves me with a lot of questions. It is not often at all that this city council sees a request for a tax treaty. Granted, it's a 5-year period, not a 10-year period. One housekeeping note here that's critically important, a difference of, if my back of the envelope math is correct, a difference between an amount in excess of slightly over $1 million versus a bit over $2 million is the phasing in of the tax rate. I believe that the table in the resolution itself, as well as the table in the 5-page tax stabilization agreement, specifically the Exhibit A, annual tax payments, shows that the tax liability for years 1 through 5 would be in the fixed amount of $68,022, as opposed to that phase-in, where, if my math is correct, I believe that year 5 would be in the neighborhood of closer to $500,000, more or less. I'm not pretending to give exact numbers here, but adding up over the course of that 5-year difference is the difference of perhaps close to $1 million. I want to make sure that we have the precise numbers in this resolution before we have any vote on it. And similarly, when it comes to the process and information we've received from the city on this, I have no doubt that the city, as well as the applicant, have negotiated this in good faith, trying to get to an outcome that makes sense for everyone here. But since I was not part of those negotiations, and I'm not sure to what extent members of the council, my colleagues, were part of any negotiations here, it is unclear to me exactly how these various numbers were reached as to a total of 20% of the units, of the total 170 units, being at these reduced rates. It's my understanding that there are effectively two groups, that is 17 apartments that would be priced at certain rates that are more affordable, and then another 17 at slightly higher rates that are likewise deemed to be affordable housing. But it's unclear to me how the numbers add up so that this provides some compensation really to the residents, future residents of the city of Warwick, and helping Warwick meet affordable housing goals while enabling the applicant to achieve its goal of proceeding with construction that would be aided by the tax stabilization agreement. Bottom line, what I have some concerns here in that based on simply the information that's presented to me at this time, I don't know if this tax stabilization agreement is really necessary for the developer to build these units. And likewise, while every property is unique, all circumstances regarding major developments are unique, and this is certainly a worthy development. However, I'm always going to be skeptical when it comes to tax stabilization agreements, because if this city council were to approach the topic lightly and not have a very thorough inquiry, then we would be effectively encouraging future developers to come to us hat in hand when they would have perhaps gone ahead with the same construction without seeking any incentive from the city. So further information along those points would be helpful, as well as perhaps information from the tax assessor or other city representatives on precisely how these numbers were reached. Thank you.
Can I answer at least the second part of that first, and I'll defer to the mayor and the tax assessor on the other stuff. Answer your question, this tax treaty is absolutely necessary. Because and you have 40 years of precedent to say that if it wasn't necessary, this developer, this owner, or some other developer would have built this project. It hasn't been built for a lot of the reasons. The 20% of affordable housing was negotiated. My client didn't want any. The city wanted more. We met in the middle. My client wanted a 10-year tax treaty. The mayor didn't want to give one. We met at 5. It was a negotiation. So, as I pointed out, subject to this approval by this honorable council. What I will tell you respectfully, as someone as old as I am and has been around city government and state government, developers, clients, advocacy groups, nonprofits will always come to the city or the state hat in hand. They're always going to ask. I'll pick a great charity like United Way. You can give them $1 million. Next year, they're going to come back for $1 million again. And what I will tell this honorable council, and I know there's some good attorneys who sit on this council, that, and you have a very good legal counsel, by the way, that, and the city does as well, that precedent is not set by the city council. And when I talk about precedent, I'm talking about legal precedent. You can vote the same way 10 times, and you cannot vote on the 11th time, and you cannot be held liable for that or negligent for that, because this is a legislative body, and you take a legislative act. So you don't, by taking a vote tonight to approve this project, you're not setting any precedent. If a developer wants money or tax incentives from this city council, state of Rhode Island, or any city council, they're going to come and ask no matter what. That's what they do. That's what they're, every advocacy group that comes before the city council asks for money for funding. That you can't say, well, we voted for this one, we have to do that. You don't. Each case is decided on its merits. Now, there's political precedent, and I will give you that, that because you say, well, now Warwick didn't do it, and we did it for Renaissance and Janco. This is a very unique parcel of land, a very unique situation. It's not like this project's going to get built. If it was, it would have been built 40 years ago. We went through 3 and 4 and 5 booms in the last 45 years of real estate. This project was never developed. This project is abutting the TF Green state largest airport, which wants to expand, which has an offer of 5,250,000 to be exact, on the table. The city could actually get nothing. This type of housing, market rate housing, mixed in with affordable housing, is exactly the kind of housing you want. This has minimal children, if any, in the school system. This is what I would call, you want the walkability factor. You want TOD, transportation-oriented development. You want to be near the train station. You want to be near the airport. You want to be able to walk next door to the airport plaza and do shopping and eating and groceries and stores and items. And there, you want to go to all the restaurants in the area. This is a perfect location for this type of project. Not because it's this project, but look at the other private developments around them. Look at the Wood apartment complex, which was the old park and ride at the airport, with the, next to the Johnson and Wales, the J. Wales, which is now called the Italian restaurant. I forgot. The names change fast. But next to the old,
Tavolo.
Tavolo, thank you. They've made a substantial $1 million investment. They have a 10-year tax treaty. Look at the Sheraton Hotel, which is now apartments. They do not have a tax treaty, but they have subsidies from the state in form of a low-interest loan from the Department of Housing. These types of developments belong in this type of area. These types of developments cannot be built with today's market cost of materials without some short-term assistance. This project is asking for the least amount of money in the shortest amount of time to get this done. And once this project gets built, while you can never say never, impossible, it's highly unlikely that the airport would want to buy it or take it by eminent domain with the approvals for or granted for this apartment. And as I said earlier, this apartment is allowed by right. We're not here asking for approval to build these. We're asking for approval to have the city enter into a short-term tax treaty to make building this economically feasible. In today's market with tariffs, labor shortage, and a whole host of supply chain issues. I'll defer to the mayor and the city solicitor to go over the math and the numbers with you. Thank you.
Everything that's been developed over my tenure as mayor, every single developer has come and asked for some kind of tax treaty. The city put the bill for infrastructure, everything. I was called in one project to the governor's office when they tried to talk it into me. Our work and my instincts always told me those projects weren't going to go forward whether we did it or not. It was dependent on whether they owned the land, whether they had bought the land. This one, we followed our instincts. This is not happening if we don't do this tax treaty, and the risks are great. As Councilman Napa said, we're going to have maybe 300 or 400 new residents, consumers, shopping at our stores, going to our restaurants. It's a great use. We don't want the airport to get a hold of it because, again, no money. In the 5 years, we could just keep getting the taxes we're getting on the land, the barren land there. It's an eyesore. As the speaker said, we've marched right down the Ann and Hope developments, the new neon there, the apartments being built near the airport connector in the transit-oriented district. They're putting two new hotels with the Great House. Says this would be a blemish if it was left like it is. And I'm not all that sure the Airport Corporation wants to put parking there. They may want an exit, the exit they wanted to put in other places if we stopped. So the risks are great, and that's the only reason I went for this. It's the first one I brought here, and I truly believe we need to do this one.
Councilman Foley.
First, I want to commend Speaker Sakachi, Joe Sakachi. Joe and I go back 25 years.
Washington Trust.
Washington Trust. And here we are again. And I say that for the record, but for edification for people. When Joe presented 25 years ago in front of this council for Washington Trust, I was the swing vote. And I went with that development for the same reason I'm supporting this. When a project comes in with Mr. Sakachi's blessing on it, name on it, I trust it. Because for 25 years, these developments in Warwick have been beneficial to the city. Yes, it helps the developer. They're going to make money, but it makes the city better. That lot has been an eyesore forever, and everybody who lands at that airport sees it, and it gives you an impression of our city. That's going to be there instead, A, is one of the reasons I'm supporting. Second, that the airport corporation does not get it is even bigger. They have been no friend to the city of Warwick. The third reason I'm supporting it is because of our mayor. For the 5 years we've been together, we came into city government, well, me for a second time, 5 years ago. Again, every project that has been presented to us in whatever form it is that the administration has asked for something from the city council, I firmly believe it has been with the benefit of the city of Warwick and the residents of Warwick in mind. And for that reason, I will support it. My only question to you, and it's an aesthetic one, the front of that looks very similar to the other project you've referenced, which is where the park and ride was. Is that on purpose? Is it just the rendering, or is it some type of blend?
It's just a rendering. It could change. We want conformity, but the color scheme could all change.
Okay.
It's a rendering, but the actual facade of what you see, the height, the window structure, the curvature will pretty much remain the same.
Okay, thank you.
Councilman Muto.
Thank you, Mr. President. I want to echo my colleagues, Councilman Brian Napper and Bill Foley. I wholly hot support this development. For a lot of the same reasons that Councilman Foley mentioned. One, it's good for the city. Two, it has been an eyesore. I want to bet it's more than 35 years because I missed Valley Steakhouse, which was in the late 70s, early 80s. Three, we do not want the Airport Corporation to get their hands on this. You're right. They have not been a friend of our city, and we need to start putting some brakes on them. But more importantly is, this will bring in, good tax revenue in the long term, and it'll be good for our city in the long term. And, I wish you and the developers good luck. And my only question is, how quickly will we start once we get the approvals, if so?
Thank you.
Is that rhetorical?
I'm sorry. No, as I said earlier, my clients every week does the pricing on it. Once we get this leg behind us, we will continue to review the market, the labor market, and the price market. But my client is eager. Well, we actually had filed this back in May, and then you guys went into your budget cycle in the month of May and June, and we didn't, you had meetings regularly. We didn't want to interfere with that process. So we're here tonight. We applied for it in July. We'd like to get in the ground by the end of the year, but honestly, Councilman, it depends on the cost of lumber. And I'm not trying to be vague, but these tariffs are on one day and they're off the next. They're 30% one day and they're 5% the other day. So that's why we go into the materials market and we price it. So when we feel that all the stars aligned and we're very close, then we'll strike right away. My client and the company that she works with and owns this property wants this development because of all the same reasons. We don't want the airport to get it. We don't like owning a property that is basically an older parking lot with a fence around it and cones. It's unsightly for the city. It's unsightly for them. This would be a great development. And most importantly, it meets the needs of affordable housing. It meets the needs of market rate housing. It's construction. I'm looking at Mr. Lattice because I know he knows, but you build a project like this, you're employing plumbers, you're employing painters, you're employing contractors, construction, materials, surveyors, engineers, lawyers. I can go on, HVAC people, the trades, some of it's union labor, most of it's non-union labor. Whatever it is, it's employing Rhode Islanders and creating housing. So we want to be in the ground. We want to break ground as quickly as we can.
Councilman Gebhardt.
Good evening. I'll echo all of the pleasantries extended by my colleagues. I just had a couple questions. One being, are there any material differences between the units being developed as affordable units and the rest of the units?
I'll confirm, but my understanding is no. They're exactly the same. Let me just confirm that. Yep, they are exactly the same. There's no difference in materials or size or whatever. The one-bedroom market rate will be the same one-bedroom for affordable and vice versa for two bedrooms or studios or whatever.
And the stipulations around those affordable units will extend throughout the duration of the 15-year term?
That's correct.
Okay. Second question would this agreement be transferable were there to be a sale or a transfer of ownership?
This agreement will run with the land. And I will tell you that my client owns a lot of property. They've been in business in Rhode Island for over a half a century, if not longer. They generally don't sell land. So that you have a history of owning a vacant parking lot with a vibrant, income-producing, brand-new building. They're going to hold on to it for a long time.
Okay. Let me just check my notes quickly.
But the reason those covenants and those agreements run with the land is if it were to be sold, the next developer would have to honor the same tax treaties, the same affordability components. That does not change. And that's typical of any time you have a restriction on property, whether income restriction or a tax restriction, they run with the land.
And just not being familiar with these, as we don't often do tax stabilization agreements here in Warwick, is there any potential that somewhere down the line in the project there's a need or a desire to come back to the city and say, hey, we're almost viable, but we need two more years or five more years or whatever the case is? Or is this kind of fixed once we authorize it?
So as I said earlier about precedent, anybody can come back at any time and ask. It would certainly be up to the council to say yes or no. I'm not so sure that the mayor and his administration would agree to that. But what I will tell you is that is one of the reasons why the tax stabilization starts at the end of the project and not at the beginning, because the project doesn't happen for another 6 months or 9 months. We're not wasting those 5 years. So it would start when actually occupancy starts. So I can't guarantee what will happen in the future, a year from now or two, but we've at least tried to accommodate that and tried to avoid the need for coming back. Many of you have been on the council for a long time. You've never seen my client here, one of the largest landowners in Rhode Island. They own a big portfolio of real estate in Rhode Island. They don't come here. They're not frequent flyers, I like to say.
Well, we're glad for their interest in this development project, and thank you very much for answering my questions.
Thank you.
Councilman DeLuise.
Yes, I just like to reiterate a lot of the, people that are supporting this project. Serving on the Warwick Zoning Board for almost 6 years, Speaker Shikachi has been before us with so many great projects. Ann and Hope was one, the various neons, the one next to the Showcase Cinema, I mean, we could go on and on and on. And it's what we approved during my time has just made the city more money and more vibrant with the development. And Councilman Foley said, if it's an integrity thing, And if it's a project that is brought to us by this gentleman, it's, you can count on it. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Councilman Lattiser.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good evening, Mr. Speaker. So when I first heard about this project several weeks ago, my initial reaction was, this makes sense to me because of all the things that we've heard so far this evening. The fact that it's been sitting there for decades, empty. To age myself, I remember going to Valley Steakhouse for a senior prom. It was kind of like a big to-do, right? That has been just a despicable looking piece of property for at least some 35, 40 years. I also was considering the fact that I know Mayor Picozzi has deterred from any of these tax agreements since he's been in office. I also knew that the initial ask was 10 years and it got cut down to 5 years. And these things were making more and more sense. I absolutely do not want the Airport Corporation to get anything else. I'm particularly disturbed, and one may not be exactly in relation to the other, that they've offered $6 million for under 6 acres of land when we only got paid $400,000 for 3.4 acres or 3-point-something acres recently. So that just aggravates me. Anyhow, since then, and only over the last several days, there's been questions that have been presented to me by various members of our community, some my own constituents in my ward. And some things that I need to get confirmation from you, Mr. Shikachi, is on the issuance of the CO. I know that there's some differences sometimes between building codes and requirements between condos and single family and apartments. Way back in the day, I was involved with the condo or the CO, final CO of the project being signed off by the building official. And that did not occur until all of the units were either occupied or sold. And that final sign-off was very important because of holding the developer to the holding his feet to the fire to get all our punch list items taken care of. So as I understand it this evening, once that first unit is sold, the CO is given.
Occupied, because they're not going to be, there'll be apartments.
I'm sorry, occupied. The CO is given. Is it given for that unit or for the entire project?
My understanding would be the first unit, because there's two buildings and you can't like build half a building. All the building has to be completed and the CO is issued. I would defer to the city's building department and the building inspector. They ultimately, Mr. DeCourt, whoever's here at the time when this project would make that decision, that's not something that we would control if they were going to issue individual COs. But generally speaking, my experience, not only in Warwick, but others, that they issue a CO per building.
Okay.
So this is a two-building project. So when that first building gets constructed and is ready for occupancy, is that's when the tax treaty would start?
When it's ready for occupancy.
Yeah. Well,
when it's occupied.
No. When the CO. You can't move into a. You're not, in theory, you're not supposed to move in until a CO is issued. That's when all the insurances kick in. Until the certificate of occupancy is issued, they cannot. The tax treaty would not start to run.
Okay.
And that was done to protect my client and the city both, as well, so that we make sure the project gets built, because it becomes very desirable to have this. And without a project, and you don't get the benefits of a beautiful building, you don't get all the other benefits that we talked about. So it was mutually beneficial to both the city and the developer.
So not that long ago, this actually was the previous city council approved a deal with the purchaser of the old Caravelle ice cream. And it was for certain things. And the things that we agreed to approve from the zoning department were all part of it. Well, now that property is still sitting there in the weeds. Nothing has happened. And all of a sudden, the property is up for lease. So with that in my mind, the question I ask now is, what happens with this tax concession, tax treaty, if it's approved by this council, and this particular developer decides in a month from now or 6 months from now that we don't think that, you know, these apartments are a good fit. We're going to do something else, or we're going to do nothing, or it's going to be sold off to whomever. Is this tax treaty, if this is approved, is that with the agreement that only
this can
that
be built? Yes.
Can be built. Nothing else.
That's correct. Well, let me just be very clear. As this property sits today without a tax treaty, and as it has sat for the last 40 years, it can be bought or sold or developed any way that they want under the confines of the laws and rules and regulations, tax treaty or no tax treaty. What we're asking today is, if we build this project of 170 housing units, 20% affordable, we are asking for this project only that this tax treaty be maintained. Now, if Amazon comes tomorrow and wants to build a fulfillment center there and offers my client $300 million for the property, they probably are likely to take it, and they'll say, thank you very much, city, but we don't need a tax treaty. Amazon's going to pay $300 million for it. So the reality is, by offering a tax treaty, the city for this property pretty much gets this property, but you can't predict the future, and this doesn't bind the city, because if Amazon were to come or somebody else were to come at this property, this tax treaty would not be in effect.
Okay,
so, by the way, Amazon could have come last year and 5 years ago and 10 years ago. I don't think they're coming. And I don't think they're coming for this location, this property. It's too valuable. Right. A more likely scenario, and my client has resisted for 30 years to sell this to the airport. A more likely scenario is the airport will move fast to acquire this property by eminent domain before this tax treaty's in place and before they can apply for a building permit. Because once you do that, you have vested rights and the value of the land goes up. And that's why the moment that the Warwick Beacon article was published, within the same week that we had filed for this, in $5,250,000 offer came in from the airport for this property. And my client said, no, thank you. As they have over the last 30 years of offers, not $5 million, not 10 years ago, but it was a different number.
Sure. Okay, I'm clear on the tax agreement is with them, Renaissance, for that building and that use. So the other thing that has caught my attention is, as you know, the taxpayers are required to make quarterly payments on their taxes. If I understand this agreement correctly, the tax is only going to be paid on July 1st and then January 1st. Why isn't, and this question would be to the mayor.
I will defer to the tax assessor and collector, and we'll pay the taxes whatever way the city wants it. If they want them yearly, we'll pay yearly. If they want to buy annually, or if they want it quarterly, whatever the city and the mayor agree to in the final draft, we'll comply with. We know that we have to pay a certain amount, and we'll pay it like everyone else does.
Well, I guess I'm looking for clarification from the administration to make sure I interpreted this correctly, that the payments would only be made on July 1st and January 1st.
Neil Dupuy, Director of Assessing. This actually came up with the agreement with Wood Partners as well, similar to what we heard here tonight. They're more than willing to make the quarterly payments. This is just a typical way it's worded, where they would pay twice a year. But it's more difficult on the city and the property owner to do it that way. So we would ask for quarterly tax payments, and I think that would be acceptable if I understood.
So I look at it from a different perspective with all due respect. When you only get paid twice a year, I think that you're not getting the same amount of revenue as if you were getting it quarterly. You might get a bigger lump 6 months down the road, but it's pretty difficult for me to wrap my arms around an agreement that's going to allow a developer, anybody, to pay taxes twice a year when our residents have to pay quarterly. So that's something that...
Well, it would be the same dollar amount. That's not really the issue, but it would be a problem.
Same dollar amount, but you're collecting it, you know, further down the road.
It would be a problem for the tax collector because our system is set up a certain way. So we'd have to truly do this as a pilot and work through the finance director's office if we did the biannual payments instead of the quarterly payments.
And Joe, I'll call you Joe because you
Joe's
said
fine.
To.
I prefer Joe.
Is that something that your client would be amenable to?
Sure. Okay. They pay quarterly now.
Okay. So what is the rent for the affordable units versus the other units?
The rent, the AMI, the which is the calculation, is a federal calculation. Rhode Island Housing actually does it. It would be 80% of the AMI in the area, and the AMI changes. That's the average median income of the neighborhood, the area, and that's how the formula is set. So it would be depending, it's hard to predict what it would be because these units won't be ready for another year and a half, 2 years, but I think you're looking at market rate, 80% of whatever the market rate is for going one bedroom or two bedroom in Warwick right now. Keep in mind these may get, you know, the non-affordable would be a little bit higher because these are gonna be brand new in a nice location. But they're adjusted, they're set by Rhode Island Housing, and they're set that way, and then it'll be 120% of AMI. It's a formula that we don't control. It's controlled by the census, the federal government, and then it's set locally by Rhode Island Housing in the local HUD office.
So assuming AMI is, I'm gonna pick a number, 60 grand, the rent for the affordable will be 80% in that particular instance of the 60,000.
Yeah, there's a I don't know the exact formula the way it's calculated, but I do know it's consistent. It's applied the same formula, but the AMI is different in Warwick than it is on the east side, than it is in South Providence or Woonsocket or Pawtucket. Mm-hmm. It's the average median income of the area, not the state. There's a formula of the area, so it'll be very consistent to what I would say is Warwick rents. And if you want to know what Warwick rents are, I would tell you to go across the street and there's a development going on. What they're getting or trying to get for those units were pretty much going to be the same. The development with the old Sheridan Hotel is going to be workforce housing. So it's a little bit of a different formula, but it's still going to be affordable and not as high market rate housing in the Sheridan.
Is there anything in this agreement that would, and I think you may have answered that already, but I'm going to ask it again, to prevent the developer with building what we see right now and turning it into a hotel instead of apartments?
I would say that it'd be very difficult to do it, and I would think that you, I know you could easily do it to condominiums without that. I think a hotel would be different. I think it would require us to come back to the city for an approval, either the zoning board, planning board, the city council, or maybe all three. Maybe Mr. Kravitz is here. Maybe he can answer that question. If I don't know the exact code. I mean, the city of Warwick's been, in a very positive way, been changing the code. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if a hotel would be any different from apartments or vice versa. But I do know it could be converted easily without any city approval to condominiums, because that's a form of ownership. Mm-hmm.
And the tax treaty would still follow that?
I don't know, to be honest with you. That's a good question, because that now that those will be individually taxed.
Right.
If you know, this council wanted to put a stipulation for the next 5 years, they wouldn't be condominiums. I could ask my client. We have absolutely no plans, and if you wanted to put a stipulation that we will not convert them to condos for the next 5 years, we have no problem with that.
And using the 5 years as based that, on the tax treaty.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would like to see that.
Okay.
The other concern is the 3% increase in assessment.
That's assumed.
I'm sorry?
Assumed rate.
Assumed rate versus what we all know is the increases in the retail value or the full selling price of these units or the apartments. It doesn't seem to be in line. 3% doesn't seem to be in line with what we've seen
in the last couple of years. Well, I will tell you that I remember there's been years that even in this administration, there have been years there's been a 0% increase in assessed value or taxes. Mm-hmm. So it really depends. But I will tell you that in the agreement as it's written now, there is no floor and there is no ceiling. So the only ceiling I know that exists is by state law. You cannot go over 6% higher. But I will tell you that it works both ways. It works in favor of the development. It works in favor of the city. If we have a really good real estate year or two, the market goes up. We've also had bad real estate years. In 2008, we had interest rates go up. The banks had liquidity problems. Lehman Brothers went bankrupt. They set off of almost a near financial collapse, and real estate dramatically reduced in value. So these are assumed rate to give you a look what it would look like with a projection, but though that assumed rates 1 year could be 2%, another year could be 4%, it could go up or down depending on that. And by the way, so do the rents in reality. So it's a fair trade for both people. I don't expect, that the real estate market in Rhode Island will go down in the short term significantly. I think we're not there. I wish we were. I wish we had more housing stock. I wish we had stabilized market like we have in Austin, Texas, or Minneapolis, where they have less restrictive zones and they encourage more and more housing development and has stabilized the market. And when you stabilize the market, not only do rents go down, but so does homelessness dramatically. It's a statistic, a proven statistic.
Councilman, would you like to hear Neil's thoughts on this? I'm over here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Because we've had discussions about this, and he has some thoughts you may want
to... Yeah, I'd like to hear those thoughts, Mayor, and I'd also like to hear from Mr. Dupuy the rationale for agreeing, I guess would be my term, to a 3% assessment increase as opposed to a 100% increase on the assessed value at that time. In reflection of the tax treaty.
All right, I'll probably ask for clarification on that part, but to address the first concern, so we've had incredible growth on the apartment market over the last couple of revals, right? But to anticipate that type of growth would continue is unrealistic. It's already at the point where most Rhode Islanders can't afford those rents. So we do have a lot of people moving in from out of state. We see that both on the sales end of things and on the rental end of things. And it's bringing up the value of those properties. But to anticipate it would continue to grow, I think it was very generous with the 3% per year, keeping in mind that we do revaluations only once every 3 years. So it's really a 9% increase every reval. Okay, and that would be incredible growth to have over the whole 15-year period. But if I could ask for clarification of your second part, because I didn't quite get what you were asking there.
I want to move on to a different question.
Okay.
What would you guesstimate, if you haven't already got a close number, that this tax treaty will amount to over the 5 years? I guess the better word is, what is the amount that would be given up if this tax treaty would be to approve on this property for 5 years?
Well, it depends how you look at it. So a couple of things that have been mentioned, you're bringing in a whole bunch of new people that are going to patronize the stores, the restaurants, the gas stations, and bring revenue into the city that we're not getting now. If they do nothing, we get what we're getting now. So how much is that you're losing? I'm not sure that's the right question, but it's probably somewhere in the range of $2.5 to $3 million if you calculate over the 5 year period, assuming there was no other benefit. But like we saw with the Wood Partners apartment complex across the street, development spurs on other development. Now they're interested in building an apartment building. We've got the renovations going on in Sheridan. This will introduce more development in that area, which is what the city's really looking to do. So it's a win-win as far as I'm concerned. And you had me at RIAC.
Well, therein lies, my concern.
You have 1 minute left, Councilman Lattison.
Thank you. I'm happy to hear the concessions that Mr. Sakachi has indicated they would be willing to agree with. I also continue to have that concern if we don't do this. But with that said, I'll yield the floor, Mr. President. I am interested in hearing what members of the public have to say on this. But I would note, I'm assuming our solicitor has made note of those two concessions. Okay, thank you.
Councilman Foley. Councilman Ricks.
Thank you. So, one thing I'd like to address briefly is that while I have absolutely no reason to not trust any of the presentation of this evening, whether from Attorney Sakachi or from the administration, this city council is an independent branch of government. We have to do our due diligence. I do not want anyone, any member of the public, walking away with any false impression that we are here to rubber stamp anything. We are here to do our due diligence, wearing our city council hats, so to speak. So even if this is a situation where, in our private capacities, we'd be comfortable with handshake deals and complete trust, we're not negotiating, we're not here in our private capacities, we're here each representing about 9,000 of our constituents and entrusted with. The authority they've given us, not for ourselves. So, I'd like to add that like many of my colleagues, I have known Attorney Sakachi as well as Speaker Sakachi for many years. I would completely trust what he is presenting, but because of my capacity here, it's incumbent upon me to verify everything to protect the taxpayers, protect the residents, and so I don't give anyone special treatment here.
I'm not asking for it, and I fully expect you to trust but verify. So ask away, Councilman.
Thank you. So couple of housekeeping items first. I would piggyback on Councilman Lattiser's idea of a restriction as to a condominium conversion. But given that one of the great benefits to the city.
Councilman Rex, you have 1 minute left.
Thank you. Is the affordable housing component. I would suggest that the restriction on a condominium conversion go for the length of the of the effect of the affordable housing component, which I believe it would currently be 15 years, or in the alternative, that there be some sort of enforcement mechanism here with a partial payback in the event of a condominium conversion. I don't know precisely what would work there.
What I would say is, if you want 5 years with no conversion, that's fine. What I would say is, I think in reality, you're cheating the city. And I'm being honest here, because a condominium is taxed at a much higher rate, and you get the same occupant that you do in as an apartment, but you get more tax revenue. The same number of kids will be there, whether they're condominiums or apartments. The same police, fire services, in which in this case is minimal, will be needed, and that's fine. But what I will say is that once the affordability restriction goes on, if those were to become condominiumized and they were to be sold, which is unlikely, but if they were, then they would have to be sold for affordable. And you're now taking that affordability ownership away from someone who might like it there, and if they could afford a reduced rate, they're not going to be able to continue to rent. And I understand what people rent, but studies have shown, housing studies have shown, when people actually take ownership of a home and they plant roots in the community, they're more invested in the community, they're less transient, they will raise families here, and they will stay in the community. So the reality is, I can appreciate what you want to do. I will tell you that my client will agree to the five-year requirement, and that the affordability restriction would stay on that property for 15 years, whether it was condominiumized or stayed as an apartment. And if it does, in year 10, the tax-free is gone, my client's paying the full rate, but that affordability restriction is still there, it passes along to the buyer. It can only be sold to somebody who is restrictive. So I don't understand why you would want to, like, what are you trying to accomplish is my question, I guess, why you would want to prevent somebody from owning a home. Instead of saying, I'm sorry, you can't buy that affordable, you have to continue to rent it. Like, what's the goal?
Councilman Ricks, you have 20 seconds left.
I would request a little bit more time, if I may. But to respond briefly, I am actually a proponent of condominium conversions. As an attorney, I have performed condominium conversions on behalf of clients, and I do tend to agree with the points regarding condominiums as opposed to apartments. However,
so if he's going to be able to continue speaking, someone needs to motion to add some time. Councilman Lattiser has motion to add 3 minutes. Is there a second? Seconded by Councilman Mito. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? All right. He's got enough to proceed.
Thank you all, except for one. Anyways, I am a fan of condominium conversions. However, when it comes to the affordable housing component of that, considering that condominiums are often owner-occupied, I just don't know how that would be workable in this context. What's going to happen with that 20%? Is it going to be a matter of a unit becomes owner-occupied? Well, once it's a condominium, we can't prevent owner occupancy. So then is that particular one of the 34 units, is that affordable housing restriction effectively transferred to another unit? That wouldn't exactly be fair to that condo owner.
No, it would. you know, in the hypothetical to hypothetical to hypothetical, but I did my best. The unit would have to be sold to a person who met the affordable housing requirements, whether it was the owner occupied or another resident of Warwick or proper, another person, regardless of where they're from, as long as they met the affordability requirement. The affordability requirement does not go away, whether it's a condominium or an apartment. As Councilman Lattice has said, it runs with the land. So the affordability component will run with the land, whether it's an apartment complex or in a condominium complex.
Thank you for the clarification. It would be effectively for the owner to sell that condo, they would still have to go by the same affordability guidelines and effectively
absolutely
have to sell that 20% of the condos at the lower rate in compliance with those particular.
Keep in mind, it's a split rate. It's a right split rate. One's 80%, one's 120%.
Correct. I was using a little shorthand there. Okay, this makes sense to me. So the remaining item here that I brought up earlier is making sure that Exhibit A, the table of annual tax payments, making sure that that is completely accurate, because as of right now, I'm not seeing the 20% okay annual increases over the years 1 through 5. I'm seeing a fixed amount of $68,022.
I will defer to either the council legal advisor or the tax assessor.
I'll yield for the moment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilman DeLuise.
I have a question for the tax assessor. Maybe we can speed things along. That land has been vacant for how many years? 35, 40 years?
I haven't been here that long, but that's my understanding.
Right. I remember I was a kid. I used to go to Valley Steakhouse. My question is, do you have figures as to how much tax revenue you collected, you collect in 1 year from that vacant piece of property?
It's roughly the 68,000. This year went down a little bit.
All right, so 68,000. Okay. All right, 68,000. Okay. So over 5 years, that's 340,000. So 5 years. Okay. Now say this development goes through. Your first year, okay, of revenue on a multi-million dollar project, can you figure that out? Tell us roughly how much it would be that the city would collect.
Yeah, it's actually in your schedule that you have.
I didn't see that. I'm sorry.
623,000.
The first year. Okay. All right. I'm just, because I like to do numbers in my head. I'm not reading that. So the first year, the city will collect 600 and whatever you just said. Okay, so 5 years, you're going to take in about 340,000, right now as vacant land. So I don't see that we need to discuss this any further. It's so 5 year moratorium on taxes, you're going to lose 340,000 at a land just sitting there.
Well, again, I look at it as you win in the fifth year or the sixth.
That's
year
what I'm saying. So I don't think there should be any more discussion on this. It's crazy.
Right. Councilman, just to make it clear, in the first 5 years, we're not losing that. We're still getting that 340,000.
No, I understand that. I understand that. But your first year where you collect those taxes is going to be double of what you would have collected in 5 years.
All right, so it looks like we can go to the public now. So first, anyone in favor of the project? Is there anyone here in favor of the project? Is there anyone here in favor of the project? Is there anyone here opposed to the project? Is there anyone here opposed to the project? Is there anyone here opposed to the project? And then finally, is there anyone here who just wants to speak on the project?
Hi. Good evening, Michelle Comar, Warwick resident. Council, you got this Tuesday. The public got this Thursday. It's a new concept, and I didn't come here planning to speak on this topic, but it's fascinating, and I wanted to learn more about it. So our city is updating its comprehensive plan. So I took a look quickly of what this is zoned for and our future look at the land use. And I don't want to speak because I'm interpreting off my little cell phone, but if the director could tell us what the present zoning is and the future land use map.